This is chapter 2, Bothered Because He Is Real, from the book Why Bother with Jesus by Michael Green from 1979. It is a very small book, and it is for those who do not read religious books. Chapter 1 was Why Bother with Jesus. This chapter is Bother Because He Is Real. For a great many people, Jesus is not real. He's make-believe like Cinderella. He's a folklore hero like Jack and the Beanstalk. Most people learn almost nothing about him in home or school these days, and the ideas of Jesus go back to a few occasions in Sunday school, to which they were packed up protesting while Mum and Dad read the paper in bed. Why should they bother about Jesus? You try asking a mountaineer one day why he bothers to climb Snowdon or Everest. He will probably reply, well, because it is there. That is one very good reason why you should bother with Jesus. He is there. He was a real historical person and not a myth, a legend, or a make-believe hero. First section. The existence of the church shows that Jesus is real. Whatever you may think about it, you can't ignore a body of some 1,500 million spread all over the world who can trace their faith back to a historical figure, Jesus of Nazareth. The first Christians were all Jewish, and their religion sprang from the religion of Israel. The only basic difference was this. The Christians were sure that the great deliverer for whom Judaism was waiting had actually come in Jesus of Nazareth. Round about the year AD 30, this new movement called Christianity came out of Judaism with nothing distinctive about it but the radiant conviction that the deliverer has come. He had died on a cross and thereby, in some strange way, dealt with human badness and selfishness. He had come alive again. People could get to know him, and he was building a new society, the Christian Church. This movement spread fast. Within 30 years, there were Christians in all the main cities of the empire, and a strange lot they seemed. A mixture of Jews and Greeks, they did not seem to contain anybody much of influence and importance. And yet they grew. They seemed very happy, very unselfish, very sure they were forgiven, very full of love for other people. This really was odd. Probably the love was a bit warped. After all, they called each other brother and sister. They were reputed to eat somebody's body and blood. Highly suspicious. So they were just the sort of people on whom Nero could pin the blame for the Great Fire of Rome, which he probably started himself in AD 64, to enlarge his palace grounds. But popular or not, the origin of the church shows that its founder was a real person. It is impossible to explain it otherwise. The second section. The Gospels show that Jesus was real. They represent a completely new type of literature, thrown up by the new movement. Nobody wrote Gospels before. There are four of them, and they were written by Jesus' followers and their associates. Much of the material clearly went the rounds by word of mouth before it was written down, some 30 or 40 years after Jesus' death. The Gospels are written from different perspectives by different men, but the figure they bring before us is manifestly the same. All of them have the spell of Jesus about them. He made such a fantastic impression on people that the normal categories of history and biography did not seem enough. They were impelled to start a completely new literary genre to do justice to this completely different man. Incidentally, in case anybody tells you that the Gospels have been messed around with and embroidered as the centuries have rolled on, You might be interested to know that the manuscript tradition is far stronger for our Gospels than it is for any other ancient book. Normally, 1,000 years or so separates the original from the oldest copy we possess, and normally there are only one or two ancient copies on which the whole text depends. With the Gospels, we have manuscripts going back to within 100 years of the originals, and there are literally hundreds of ancient copies written in 12 languages. We can be absolutely sure that the Gospels have come down to us very much as they were written. They are as real and reliable as the Jesus they represent. Now for section 3 of chapter 2. Ancient Roman historians show us that Jesus was real. That is very remarkable when you come to think about it, because these literary Romans were very aristocratic creatures. Why should they bother about a peasant teacher who lived on the very edge of the map in Judea? Nevertheless, some of them did bother. Pliny was the governor of northern Turkey, right up by the Black Sea in about AD 112. He wrote lots of letters to the emperor, and they have survived. He tells us about the Christians, their numbers, their influence. Sale of sacrificial victims for the pagan temples had dropped to nothing. Their worship, early in the morning, with hymns to Christ as God. Their loving and harmless lives, and their regrettable unwillingness to stop being Christians when he told them to. Many of them he executed, but the movement refused to lie down and die. You can read all about it in his epistles, 10:96. Another aristocratic Roman writer was Cornelius Tacitus, the governor of the rich province of Asia Minor, our central and coastal Turkey today. He writes of the way in which the emperor Nero picked on the Christians, a scapegoat for the fire of Rome in AD 64. He tells of the incredible cruelty practiced on them. Some were clothed in the skins of wild beasts and torn apart by dogs, while others were covered with pitch and set alight at night in Nero's gardens. Tacitus felt sorry for them, but he did not like them. With well-bred distaste, he notes, the name Christian comes to them from Christ, who was executed in the reign of Tiberius by the procurator Pontius Pilate, and the pernicious faith, suppressed for a while, broke out afresh and spread not only through Judea, the source of the disease, but even throughout Rome itself, where everything vile comes and is fated. Annals 15:44. There is plenty of other Roman evidence that Jesus was a real person of recent date. The cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum were overwhelmed by a volcano in AD 79, and Christian mosaics, wall paintings and inscriptions have been found there, also in all probability in early Christian chapels. Archaeology has also come up with a decree from the emperor Tiberius, AD 14-38, or Claudius, AD 41-54, discovered in Nazareth, which threatens with a death penalty anyone who disturbed tombs. It looks as if this is official reaction to Pilate's report on the empty tomb of Jesus. There can be no doubt in the mind of anyone who takes historical evidence seriously that Jesus actually lived and died in Palestine under the governorship of Pontius Pilate, which ended in AD 36. The last section in chapter 2 is the Jewish writers also show that Jesus was real. Christianity soon became a great threat to Judaism, and there is evidence to show that the very mention of Jesus was frowned on in Jewish documents. Nevertheless, scattered through the Mishnah, there are allusions like these. Rabbi Eliezer said, Balaam looked forth and saw there was a man born of a woman who would rise up and seek to make himself God and cause the whole world to go astray. We read of his miracles with a disparaging comment. He learned magic in Egypt. We read too of his death. They hanged Yeshua of Nazareth on the eve of Passover. But the most surprising passage of all comes in Josephus, Antiquities 18:3. Josephus was an influential Jewish refugee general writing in Rome in their 90s and very keen to keep his nose clean and get the best deal possible for his conquered countrymen who were smarting under the sack of Jerusalem in AD 70. So you would not expect him to say much about a controversial figure like Jesus. What then do you make of this? And there arose about this time, it is Pilate's governorship, Jesus a wise man, if indeed we should call him a man, for he was a doer of marvelous deeds, a teacher of men who received the truth with pleasure. He won over many Jews and also many Greeks. This man was the Messiah. When Pilate had condemned him to the cross at the instigation of our leaders, those who had loved him from the first did not cease. For he appeared to them on the third day alive again, as the holy prophets had predicted, and said many other wonderful things about him. And even now the race of Christians, so named after him, has not yet died out. End of quote. When you get a piece as explicit as that in an anti-Christian writer, it is pretty shattering. No wonder lots of people have attacked the text. Nevertheless, this passage is there in all the manuscripts of Josephus. Some of it may well be ironic, but there can be no doubt from this Jewish evidence that Jesus was a real historical person. And notice how we have allusions scattered throughout this hostile testimony to his unusual birth, like born of a woman means conceived out of wedlock in Jewish culture. His date, his disciples, his miracles, although assigned to the devil's agency, his claims, seeks to make himself God, his messiahship, his death on the cross, his reported resurrection, and his continuing impact on society through his followers. That is a great deal to have gleaned from sources who, for different reasons, worked so strongly opposed to Christianity. Wherever you look then, in the ancient records, be they Christian, archaeological, Roman or Jewish, you find the same message. Jesus was real, no doubt about it. Moreover, Jesus is real. He is still in business. And just because he is real, just because he is there, he is well worth bothering about. After all, we do not date our whole era by a myth. Chapter 3 that will follow is Bother Because He Is the Ideal.